Hey Bulls Nation, welcome to another episode of the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile. We're coming off the heels of All-Star Weekend, and what a showing for the city of Chicago. Everything from the pregame festivities to the actual game itself was just amazing. And, you know, the NBA, I think of all professional sports, has the best All-Star experience. You know, the MLB All-Star Game and Home Run Derby are kind of bland. The NFL with the Pro Bowl, I mean, that's just hot garbage. We all know it. The NHL, same thing, a very boring All-Star experience. The NBA has actually done a pretty good job keeping people captivated. And this year with the rule changes to the game, I know there were some people that were skeptical of it with the new scoring system and everything. But it actually turned out to be a really fun and competitive game. You actually saw defense and players trying in that fourth quarter. And it made it a lot of fun. So kudos to the NBA for really trying something new, going out on a limb with a totally different format that, you know, raised some eyebrows. But they did their homework, and it turned out to be a really awesome finish to the weekend. But even everything leading up to it, the festivities, you know, were done really well here in Chicago. And it was really cool to see the city on full display with the pregame video packages and introductions, you know, with Common. And you had the video package that included Barack Obama and Michael Jordan, Isaiah Thomas. It was just really cool to see, and almost a tourism video for Chicago, and showing how much basketball means to this city. And it makes you think, if the Bulls were a winning team right now, how electric it would have been. I mean, it was pretty electric this weekend. But, you know, Chicago, we love our sports teams. And when you put a winner out there, man, things get electric. We remember how things were in the 90s when Michael and Scottie were here, and every year the Bulls were competing for championships. It was electric. You know, in the first three-peat, Chicago Stadium was so loud in that place. The place would shake to its core. And then in the UC, you know, the house that Jordan built for that second three-peat, it was one of the hottest tickets in town. It was hard to get into, and it was electric every night. And even with those teams, with Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Luol Deng, those Tom Thibodeau-led teams, there was an electric atmosphere. And part of me was also a little sad watching the All-Star game, because you wonder, where's that all gone? It was a rough weekend, I think, for the Chicago Bulls. As great as it was for the city of Chicago, it was a rough weekend for the Chicago Bulls. Because starting on Friday, with First Take in town for the All-Star game, they have Zach LaVine on as their last guest. And during his appearance, the crowd starts a Fire Garpax chant when they ask LaVine about the state of the Bulls. And really, I think it's been one of the first public displays of frustration from Bulls fans that's been covered and seen by the national media and the national spotlight. And I think that is pretty significant. We also had, I think, a lot of instances where different people in the national media, you know, they're in Chicago, so naturally questions are going to come up about the team that's hosting this event. We had reporters and analysts like Adrian Wojnarowski, Charles Barkley, Kevin Garnett, many others, even Scottie Pippen, who I think technically is still employed by the team as an ambassador. You know, even he was saying, I barely know anybody that's on this roster. They all shared very negative opinions about the state of the Chicago Bulls, and it's well-deserved. I think a lot of us Bulls fans know the issues that are plaguing the Bulls, everything from management to coaching to the poor roster construction. We know there's a problem, and the national media was here to really shine a light on it. Now, despite that gloomy feeling, there was a report that intrigued probably a lot of Bulls fans and might have made them feel a little bit better, at least on the surface. It came from Joe Colley of the Chicago Sun-Times. He's been reporting since November, December that there's going to be some changes within the Bulls front office at the end of the season, specifically at the GM position, that Gar Forman would either be fired or, you know, reduced to a scouting role. What he reported, though, on Sunday was that over the All-Star weekend, Michael Reinsdorf and John Paxson were back channeling to put out feelers for potential candidates who could come in and be part of the basketball operations of the Chicago Bulls. According to Cowley's report and other reports that have surfaced from Casey Johnson at NBC Sports Chicago, we saw a report also come from ESPN, that the Reinsdorf family wants to move Gar Forman into a role into the scouting department and move John Paxson to more of an advisory role and really empower this new GM they're bringing in. Now, there's a lot of questions that I have. Is Gar Forman just a scout? Is John Paxson as an advisor still going to have a lot of pull with the Reinsdorfs and with basketball operations? I think that's something that Bulls fans need clarity on. I have my doubts about this because I think there's going to be some uncertainty as we get closer to that time where they need to hire somebody. If they really are looking to hire somebody that's going to be an empowered basketball voice, I think that person would need reassurance that John Paxson, Gar Forman are not going to be involved in day-to-day operations. That if they are in the organization with reduced roles, that they are out of that person's hair. They're not influencing any of the decision-making or final decision-making. If that person wants to lean on them for advice, I mean, they could. But I would hope that this is a person that is from outside the organization. It sounds like that's the route they want to go. They want to get somebody outside of the Bulls organization. But if they do, that person better have a loud voice in the room. So it was an interesting weekend because it was great for the city of Chicago to be showcased with a very memorable All-Star weekend, memorable All-Star game. But it also was tough because we know that, you know, this Bulls team right now, they're in rough shape. You know, the national perception of the Bulls is probably at one of its lowest points. And, of course, the product on the court's not that great. We've been talking about that all year. We will continue talking about that for the rest of the season, I'm sure. So we do have a guest to join us to talk a little bit more about this. He's from Chi Sports Nation and is the host of the Chicago Hot Sauce podcast. I want to welcome in Derek Briscoe. Derek, thanks for joining me. And before we get into these reports on the Bulls front office, wanted to ask you, what did you think of the All-Star game and the festivities from the weekend?
Well, I thought the NBA did a great All-Star weekend with it being in Chicago. The dunk contest was very good. D-Wade robbed Aaron Gordon, though. making sure his guy from the Heat won that one. But it was a great contest between Aaron Gordon and Derrick Jones Jr. The three-point contest was exciting, even though Zach was eliminated in the first round. Buddy Hill winning it on that last shot, it brought that excitement for that event. And, no, Common gave, like, the best All-Star introduction in the history of the All-Star game. And the game was competitive. I mean, the new format worked. You could tell that the players were competitive. They were taking it serious. They were trying to get the charities that they were representing that 100,000 each quarter. And, you know, the 300,000 for the end of the game, the actual win. So I love the new format, and I hope that's what the NBA continues to implement so that the All-Star game can have that competitive feel again.
You brought up even like with the dunk contest, even if you didn't agree that, you know, Derrick Jones Jr. was the winner, it made it so competitive, and just the conversation that came from that was captivating. The pregame intros, the pregame package that TNT put together that had, you know, Isaiah Thomas, Michael Jordan, Barack Obama, Common. I felt like everything was so well done, and then to have it with a very competitive fourth quarter, and you know, I know it came down to a free throw, which is kind of anticlimactic, but it was still a lot of fun, you know. And I thought it's one of those memorable All-Star games and All-Star weekends that it's always going to be tied to the city of Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago had the 88 with Jordan from the free throw line. Now they have the 2020 with how competitive it was, even though it did end on that free throw. maybe hopefully they can tweak it so where it doesn't, they can't end the game on a free throw.
Oh yeah, I'm hoping that if they're gonna stick with that format with the targeted score and everything, I kind of hope they do it with like that check ball kind of scenario where you got to end it with an actual possession. Like you definitely got to do that going into to next year if you're going to keep that format.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was like the only knock that I've seen on that format is that after such an epic competitive performance in that fourth quarter where they're going back and forth and Team LeBron is trying to hit that three for it to end on that free throw, it kind of was not only damper.
Like I said, it was a great showcase for Chicago, but I think there was sort of this odd feeling as a Bulls fan because, you know, you felt the electricity at the UC, you felt it throughout the different events, but and we know that feeling. We've seen it when we've had a competitive team, and I think it was just sort of this, I don't know, for me there was like a feeling of sadness knowing, you know, where the Bulls are at right now, that, you know, we didn't have a representative there. You know, there was no Zach LaVine, and you can agree or disagree with him being there or not. But not having him there and just knowing where this team is right now, that it's kind of a dark spot. The Bulls were dragged, I think, through the mud a lot nationally, and rightfully so, this whole weekend. So, I don't know, I just thought it was there was a little bit of sadness if you were a Bulls fan, though, too.
I mean, definitely. That's the most packed that you've seen that you see for a basketball game since like the 2012 playoffs. You know, people aren't showing up to see the Bulls games like they used to. Like you said, they were dragged through the national media, which was well deserved. The Fire Garpacks campaign was in full effect, and hopefully that's going to cause some change.
Kind of just speaking to that too. So like, you know, you have this great event going on, and as the game's unfolding, we see the report from the Chicago Sun-Times. So Joe Colley reports that there's possible changes coming to the front office, that Michael Reinsdorf and John Paxson used the weekend to start back-channeling and finding potential people to come in and take on the role of a GM. They're calling it an empowered GM. What was your reaction when you saw that report come out and when you started seeing more reports come out that there might be some changes coming at the end of the season?
It's like, finally. it's like, this Garpacks, I don't know how they could have their job for so long and not get results. I mean, it's crazy. And to think that maybe finally, after all this negative attention on the front office, you know, people on First Take Chen Fire Garpacks, and the report of the fan getting kicked out for the Fire Garpacks jersey at the United Center, and just how this Bulls rebuild has been handled, it's like, finally, maybe, just maybe, we can get them out of there and move in a different direction. I mean, I was at the Bulls' last game before the All-Star break at the Washington Wizards, and I was right by the Bulls tunnel, and John Paxson was there, and he's walking past me. He's sitting a few rows over from me. People are yelling at him to resign, and he left during the third quarter and didn't come back. It's like he saw that this team, he saw enough. He looked stressed. He looked tired. He left during the third quarter, did not come back. And I think that kind of tells a lot where your VP is. He saw enough of that team that night to where he didn't even stick around for the whole game.
Well, I actually wonder, you know, you said that there were people chanting to resign. I wonder if that also got to him, too. You know, it's interesting. You brought up the fact, like, how can you be here so long and you know, you have nothing to show for it? And really, like, this 17 years, John Paxson's been in that role of vice president, or with as an executive with the team, I should say, for 17 years. And I guess at that point where it really has reached a boiling point, like here in Chicago, at Bulls games, on sports radio, on Twitter, you could tell, like, the fan base is done, and it culminated at All-Star Weekend. Like, you brought up First Take, you know, you hear the Fire Garpacks chants. It started trending on social media in the city, you know, hashtag Fire Garpacks, all throughout the All-Star game. And I wonder, do you think that these events might have caused, you know, the Reinsdorf family or someone within the Bulls organization to leak this out, that they're looking to change the front office? Do you think it was intentional?
I do. I definitely think it's intentional, where, you know, they're seeing on national TV, people are chanting Fire Garpacks. And you said it was trending on Twitter. It was actually trending worldwide because it had over 20,000 tweets of Fire Garpacks. So somebody from the Bulls media team, their digital team, they're seeing that. And, you know, once you're affecting the bottom dollar, old man Jerry isn't going to be too happy. So he's going to think of what he can do to, you know, get people to come back and have more faith in the Bulls again. And I think the only thing that he could think to do that was to leak that, hey, we're going to make some changes to the front office.
You know, the other part of that story that was interesting, and I brought it up a little bit before you hopped on here, was the way the report came out from Cowley and from ESPN. We also saw Casey Johnson had a story on it from NBC Sports Chicago. It almost seems like, though, that they're looking to reassign John Paxson to a more of an advisory role to Michael Reinsdorf. Put Gar in a position where he's just a scout, and then hire a GM that they claim will have a very powerful voice. But I don't know, like, is that enough for you as a Bulls fan? Or do you think you got to fire those guys and just be done with it?
I mean, the hashtags and the chant weren't, we find a different position for these guys. It's fire them. And I don't understand what keeping them around would accomplish. Like you said, John Paxson's been there for 17 years, and he's been a good reason that the franchise is the way it is right now. So I don't think he should be offering any advice for anything right now with the Bulls basketball. He should just be gone. Foreman, I mean, I think he's been pretty much cast out to the scouting department already, and that really hasn't reaped any benefits. So why not just clean house, get fresh new ideas and a new set of eyes?
It's weird because the way the reports have been labeled, it's like they want to give this new person all the power, but like, would somebody want to take a job where they know they're coming in and you might have the guy who used to be running the show lurking in the background? Like, I think that would be my biggest fear as a Bulls fan, is that whoever might want this job might look and say, hey, why would I want to come here if I know John Paxson is right behind me or could be telling Jerry and Michael something counter to what I want to do?
I saw a report that said, you know, that money would be no issue for finding a new GM. And I don't see them, you know, giving somebody a whole lot of money where they're not going to have the full control. And like you said, I don't think anybody would want to come here if they're thinking, well, I'm going to still have to answer to Paxton. That's not the role that I'm accepting here. I'm supposed to have full control, and that's what has to be made clear. That's what they have to be on board with, is whoever they bring in, they have to have full control. John Paxton can't come and tell them, hey, do this, or it's not going to work. We'll be right back in the same position that we're in.
Well, and you know, I think that's a really good point. Like, I think it has to be made clear to whoever's coming on, or even just to Bulls fans too, that if John Paxson is relegated to an advisor role or something very minor, it's one that doesn't have power, it doesn't have the final say in basketball operations, and Gar is actually relegated to a glorified scout. I think it needs to be made super clear to everybody because, you know, we saw like Ricky O'Donnell from Bloggable. I saw Matt Peck from Bulls Outsiders and Locked On Bulls. You know, they both have made this point, and Ricky did it in a really good article, that, you know, why is it that, you know, they're not being held accountable? I mean, it's the Reinsdorf's money. If they want to waste it by demoting two guys and spending money for them to do nothing, that's their prerogative. But I think they got to make it clear that, you know, if these two guys are going to be relegated to smaller jobs, that they are not involved at all. Because you're right, if money's not an option, you're not going to pay a guy millions and millions and millions of dollars to take on this role if you have those two still lurking in the background. You got to be paying this guy a shitload of money if he's going to actually be doing the day-to-day role in basketball operations.
Exactly. Paxton cannot have any say in day-to-day basketball operations. Let him do something like merchandising.
Yeah, just decide pricing on jerseys and hats at the UC. That's it.
Decide the giveaways for the fans.
Yeah, there
something,
you go.
Something very minor that does not have him in any role of power as far as like GM. He can't have any say in that whatsoever.
I wonder what, when they say advisor, like, is that just, hey, I'm just here to collect a check? Or, you know, if you got any questions about, like, I don't know, if the general manager who we've empowered is just wanting to bounce ideas off somebody, he's there for that. Kind of like Doug Collins. Is that what an advisor is? Like, I think it has to just be made clear. Like, what does that role do? And I guess the same for Gar. If he's just going to be a glorified scout, Gar is such an interesting guy. It's almost like he's this toxic figure around the league. You go back to 2011 when he won Executive of the Year. You know, he was a really highly regarded GM, and then it's almost like he got more toxic over time. And around the league, agents can't stand him, players can't stand him. I don't know, coaches can't stand him. So if he's going to be a scout, he's got to be pretty buried on the organizational depth chart.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Speaking on the advisor role, you know, Scottie Pippen's a special advisor to Michael Reinsdorf, and Scottie Pippen doesn't know half the Bulls players on the team.
That's a good point. So, like, maybe the advisor role really means absolutely nothing. So, I guess they just got to make it 100% clear that, look, this advisor role, it might just be about community relations. It might just be a sounding board. That's it. If it's somebody that has, you know, again, a say in basketball ops, then I think it's Bulls fans have every right to get upset at that point. I would be in that camp too. I think I'd be pretty pissed if, you know, he's still there and a heavy voice in basketball operations.
Yeah, that, like I said, he can't have any say in that whatsoever. But if, like I said, if you're throwing all this money out, you got to know that nobody's going to take this job where they're supposed to be the general manager or the VP of basketball operations, and then they still have the answer to John Paxton. It's just unrealistic.
I guess if you're Michael Reinsdorf right now, is there a certain type of person that you're looking to take this role? Are you looking for, you know, somebody who's a right-hand man within another organization, or are you trying to go for, like, an established person? You know, I'll throw out a name like a Masai Ujiri, who's got a year left on his contract. Are you trying to make a play for that? Or are you trying to find the guy who sits next to Masai Ujiri in Toronto? Like, which route would you go with if you were Reinsdorf?
I would go for Masai Ujiri.
It's going to be expensive. It sounds like the Raptors, before he's let out of his contract, they want to see if they can get a team to give him a draft pick. So, like, if you were the Bulls, would you be willing to do that? Would you be willing to give up a draft pick for a guy like Ujiri?
I don't think I would give up a draft pick just because it seems like he's already made his mind up that he's going to leave Toronto. That should be an easier sale for the Bulls that, hey, this is a big market team. This is the Chicago Bulls. I mean, play him the All-Star package. And, you know, that that intro with Jordan and Obama, use that as a selling point.
You know, that's actually really interesting, because I thought about this after that, you know, it might not sell a player that, hey, come to Chicago. Like, I think players want to have a winning team that they see is on the rise. And, you know, I think the secondary part is, man, look at how electric it is in this city and, like, how these fans get. I think that's, like, a secondary thing for players. But if you're somebody like Masai Ujiri, that might actually be an interesting selling point. When you see how electric that crowd was at All-Star Weekend and you see how it's a basketball-crazed town, and it might be put in the back of your head that, you know, if I come here and rebuild this team, I'm really going to make a name for myself. And Masai Ujiri is one of the best in the league. You know, did a great job building up the Denver Nuggets back in the day when Carmelo Anthony was there, when he left there, and you see what he's done with Toronto. I wonder, like, you know, something like this past All-Star Weekend could have been a moment where somebody like a Masai Ujiri looks and says, hey, I got a shot to really cement my legacy if I go to a place like Chicago, and they do offer me the full boat to run the basketball operations.
They said money's not an object, so you can get your asking price. You come and you see how electric the city is, how diehard Bulls fans are. You know, and like you said, you would really make a name if you're able to bring the Bulls back to grace from the Jordan days, and say the Bulls get championship number 7. You're pretty much a legend in Chicago just off that.
It's a lot like when Theo Epstein came to the Cubs. Now, the Cubs were in a drought that was over 100 years, but he was an established general manager, got paid, and built the Cubs into a contending team, and they won a World Series. And I think that cemented Theo Epstein's legacy. For a guy like Masai Ujiri, that would cement his legacy, I'm sure. Let me ask you another question, though. Would you be okay if the Bulls went with the route that we're starting to see that's very popular with hiring an agent? You know, you said you want to do the established executive, but would you be okay with a route like that if they went with a player agent?
I would be okay with that just to get Garpax out of there. I mean, any option is better than what we have right now.
Well, I mean, you know, we do have, I mean, you've been a part of it. I mean, we have so many great candidates that came on the Rebuildable podcast in the last year. You know, we had the rebuilding plans. So maybe like all of you guys who have come on the show should just send in your episodes to the Chicago Bulls and say, hey, look, I put together a rebuilding plan. I can do this. It's probably better than Garpax. I think it would be really good. It would be a great promotion for the podcast, too.
Definitely. And, you know, just thinking about this now where they're saying, hey, we want a louder voice. And his comments on the Reinsdorf in the media recently, I'm like, hey, bring in Kevin Garnett.
Ooh. Well, Garnett, I don't know. Like, Garnett just strikes me as just way too fucking crazy. I don't know. Like, that guy. See, the only thing, though, like, I'm cool hiring former players, but, like, I feel like you have to have maybe some background in building a team or even just, like, running a business. I don't know if I could do that with Garnett. Like, that would be painful. And also knowing the beef he had with Joakim Noah and just his. I don't know if I'd be down for that.
I mean, hey, you want a loud voice? You get Kevin Garnett.
That is a loud voice. Well, there are some former players that right now are working in front offices around the league. We've got Shane Battier, who's a really hot name. He's with the Miami Heat. He's working with Pat Riley. So it might be tough to pry him out of South Beach. But there's also Mike Dunleavy Jr., who's an assistant GM with the Golden State Warriors, working under Bob Myers. Would any of those two, you know, entice you as a possible former player to come into the organization?
They're enticing, but like you said, Shane Battier is in Miami. I don't see him leaving that. I mean, No, you won some championships with the Heat. You're there under Pat Riley. I mean, the Heat have a great culture as far as players, as far as front office. I don't see, you know, him leaving that. Dunleavy, again, Warriors. They have a pretty good front office there with Bob Myers as well. So I'm not sure if those two guys are going to say, let me go but to Chicago. But, you know, it would definitely be an option if it presented itself. I mean, like I said, anything is better than guard packs.
That's true. Well, I wonder with those two, too, like, I guess it would probably come down to, like, you know, how much are the Bulls willing to spend if, like you said, if money isn't an option? Like, if they offered, you know, Dunleavy a lot of money, I could see him maybe saying, hey, I have no place to really move up here with the Warriors. I'll go ahead and rebuild this situation in Chicago. With Battier, though, that's with Miami, I think it's a little different. Like, it seems like Pat Riley, if he identifies you as a disciple, he's going to do everything he can to keep you. Like, he'll give you a ton of money. He'll give you more power. You know, that I could see being a little bit of a tougher one is Shane Battier for sure.
Yeah, Pat Riley knows how to take care of his people.
Oh, for sure. Like, Miami's always done a really good job, I think, of, you know, taking care of the guys that they groom. Let me wrap it up here with this question for you. If you had to make a prediction on how this is going to play out when the season ends, how do you think the front office is going to look when we start the NBA draft in June?
I am going to be optimistic here and say that guard packs are removed from power. They bring in a new VP, GM, maybe, you know, combine the role and just give the new hire all the power. And, you know, if you bring in a new GM, they usually will want to have a coach that they picked. And Boylan's contract is very cheap, so I also see Boylan being let go, and we having a new head coach and a new front office power structure for next year. And I guess we'll probably have the seventh pick again. So, you know, we'll have a new front office, new coach, and then a lottery pick. And hopefully people will be excited to tune in and see, you know, if the Bulls can start to come back to grace.
Well, I will tell you, if it's a new person in power, that number seven pick isn't going to be as annoying. I think Bulls fans will look at it way differently, knowing that maybe there's somebody new and there's a new voice in the room. Actually, one other quick question for you. In your scenario, there's a new person in charge of basketball operations. Going back to what we were talking about earlier, do you think that John Paxson and Gar Foreman are still employed in some way by the Chicago Bulls?
Unfortunately, yes, because Jerry Reinsdorf has never fired a GM in the history of his ownership of the Chicago Bulls, and I don't see him doing that now. He's just going to have them move to a different section of behind the scenes.
I'm with you on that. I'm definitely with you on that. I think that we're going to see a new person in charge, and I think that John Paxson and Gar Foreman will be in a different roles within the organization. I don't know. I'm still skeptical about whether or not John Paxson will actually have a reduced role or still have a say in basketball operations. Derek, real quick, before I do let you go, where can people find you on Twitter and the Chicago Hot Sauce podcast?
You can reach me on Twitter at Young Jordan, and you can reach the podcast's Twitter at Chicago Hot Sauce, and of course that's available on Apple, Spotify, all those good channels.
Awesome, Derek. Thank you again for coming on, and of course we'll have you on again sometime soon.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to the Rebuildable Podcast. Be sure to check out more episodes on Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Rebuildable.com.